Land. Welcome to Blackanese Chick. I am your host, Rhett Thompson, and I am so very glad you chose this moment in time to download and hang out with me. I appreciate all your support and your sweet tweets, your tweets and your messages and your emails. Supporting the podcast, please. I totally enjoy every single one of them. Even the ones of you out there, and you know who you are, who wish me good morning. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. Send me a tweet and say, I hope you have a blessed day. Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. You can hit me up on Twitter at Blackanese Pod, BlackanesePod. Also, at Rhett Thompson, RhettThompson. Email blackanesepod at gmail.com. Facebook, Blackanese Chick, Rhett Thompson. I got a fan page. And there's a website, blackanesechick.com. It's getting together, people. It's getting together. It's getting together. It's getting together right now over me. Dun, 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 dun. All right. You know, this summer, I told myself I would do one big thing for myself. Usually, I do the day job thing so that can support my comedy, my stand-up comedy endeavors, my podcast, all of that, pay the bills. All that is just a fraction of the bulk of my check. Besides bills, everything goes to the family. Everything goes to them. So I figure I'm going to do one special thing for myself. So I decided to attend my college reunion. I live in Miami, Florida, where it's nice and sunny and bright, and we have the oceans and the beaches. My undergrad years were spent, my 4 years, my formative years, were spent at Allegheny College in this teeny town in Pennsylvania called Meadville, Pennsylvania. I think they were known for, well, their claim to fame, at least historically, I think the muckraker reporter Ida Tarbell is from that area. Also, I believe Sharon Stone, the actress Sharon Stone, was born in Meadville. And I think something about the invention of the zipper. They either, one version of the zipper was made there, or they were big in manufacturing zippers. Yeah, hardcore. Meadville, Pennsylvania. I started getting invitations for my college reunion, oh, I think in the wintertime. Like, it might have been like January or something. And I got it. It was a little, I think it was like a postcard or flyer or something. And I wasn't sure if I'd be able to wing it. I live in Miami. For me to travel up there and, you know, the cost and the time. And it's like, I don't know. But the thing that was cool about it is the actual flyer. It actually had my photo on it. It was from the last time I went to the reunion. And I was like, and my mom was like, oh, you should go. You should go. I was like, I don't know. Maybe, because I was struggling. I'm still struggling, all right? But I was definitely struggling, like, money-wise, and the idea of, like, spending money for the flight and the combinations. I was like, I don't know. But then Allegheny, I love my undergrad because my undergrad school, because they know how to wield the propaganda machine. So I was getting like emails and I was getting postcards and I was getting like letters, you know, reminding, hey, don't forget to save the date. The reunion's coming up. The reunion's coming up. The reunion's coming up. Have you made your reservations for the reunion? The reunion's coming up. And every single piece of mail had my picture on it. At first, I was like, oh, maybe it's because they want to show people that black people go to this reunion, too. It just so happened to be a photo with me and two folks. They were upperclassmen when I was there. I was definitely a couple years younger than them, class-wise. But it was a couple of them and one of their wives. And I was like, oh, Allegheny trying to be slick, trying to show that black people went to this school, just a reminder. But then it kept coming and coming and coming with my photo. And you know, sometimes it's like one of those movies you think you're hallucinating. Like, oh, my God, that's not really me. That's really somebody. No, this was definitely me. I'm going to post it onto the Facebook group page so everyone knows those. What I love about the picture, like, I was watching my diet, and I no longer was sick from the hypothyroidism, so I was on point with my game. I was doing P90X regularly. My arms was in very good shape. Very good shape. Very good. I mean, you couldn't really see the diamond until you get like that muscle that's at your shoulder that, you know, if you turn your wrist in, there's like a diamond that comes up. Right now, my diamond is encased in a layer of lady fat. But back then, I did not have Serena Williams arms, but for me, my arms was pretty toned. I had a dress that dare I wear a sleeveless dress with ruffles at the top. It was like, here, pay attention to my upper arm. I was looking pretty good. And that picture kept coming and coming. I was like, okay, I think I need to go to this thing. I called my college roommate and said, you know what? I think I'm going to go to this thing. And she was like, are you sure you're going to go to this thing? Don't say you're going to go to this thing and then change your mind at the last minute. And then I'm stuck going to this thing. And I was like, no. I'm going to go to this thing. So I made the arrangements. I budgeted. I scraped up some dough for myself. Flew out of Fort Lauderdale. Went to D.C., met up with my old college roommate, and then we drove, I think it was something like 6 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, to this tiny town in northwest Pennsylvania, Meadville. I didn't realize how much I missed by living in Miami all of these years. I forgot what it was like to not be surrounded by palm trees and ants, mysterious lizards crawling all over your house. I get to my girlfriend's house and right outside DC, I was like, oh, there's like trees with leaves on it. Just regular leaves. And it was humid because it was D.C., but not Miami humid. And there was no, like, rodents. Only a random squirrel minding their business, eating nuts. You know? I was like, oh, this is what it's like to be in the real world. Not in the tropics. And then we drive, and it was like, wow, you know, going through Pennsylvania, all of the mountains and the farmland and cows and hills, and I was like, oh, this is what it's like to be in not the tropics. Even the sky was different. Miami is at sea level and it is completely flat. You could be in a tall building miles away. And almost see, like, if you're at a good vantage point you know, you have no other buildings blocking your way. You can see for miles and miles and miles and miles. It's amazing. If you ever get a chance to visit Miami, stay downtown, stay in one of the hotels, you literally can see 10, 12, 15 miles out to like the airport. It's like completely flat, 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 flat. Now it's all mountains. I was like, what's on the other side of that thing? What's this depth of perception? Even in the sky, because now we're elevated, we're like how many hundreds of thousands of feet up? I'm like, what? This the sky is weird. The clouds are weird. Why are they? And my girlfriend was like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, in Miami, we have like a weird low pressure system, and the clouds are like low and in your face, and here they're so far away. Clouds, where are you? Come back to me. Come back. She was like, are you high? I'm like, what's wrong? I was like, no, it's just different. It's just different. I feel like I need to set the stage here. Set the stage. You know, you I don't know if you've ever like read certain books, watched certain movies or shows. You have your main characters, and then the location is almost as just as important of a character in itself. Like if you ever watched Sex and the City, certain plot points can't happen unless that show is specifically set in New York City. Same thing with these 4 years of my life, having to be at Allegheny College in Meadville, Pennsylvania. How can I describe it? Okay, so Meadville, tiny town in this county. I think Pennsylvania itself is a character in itself, but I was only in Meadville in Crawford County. This small town, population of whatever, it's not booming. You know, you have your town, and then way at the top of the hill, which you can see as you're approaching the town from the highway, you know, all these big, like you're at the foot of these, like, I don't want to call them, I don't know, I think of mountains being these gigantic things, but I guess these are kind of sort of mountains. They're very tall, these tall hill things of dirt that have thousands and thousands of thousands of trees on them. I guess that is technically a mountain, right? So you drive through these mountain things, and then you get into this little valley, and there's this town, this tiny, tiny town with cobblestone streets and clapboard houses, wood frame buildings, these old Victorian style painted lady houses, huge grand things that are now businesses. So there's a flower shop and a beauty salon, and they're all in these Victorian style of houses. Then you go up this main street of this hill, and boom, that's where Allegheny is. And I think even the physicality of the Allegheny being at the top of the hill, the town being at the bottom, kind of played into the friendly tension between the school and the town. And the main building of the school was called Bentley Hall, this big red brick building. It had this spire at the top and very, I don't want to say formidable, but once you see it, it's like a landmark. It's even part of the seal of the school now. The school was founded back in 1815, and to show you how old the school was, and the guy who founded Allegheny was friends with Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson actually wrote dude a letter saying, "Hey, I think that that's going to be a really fine institution of learning." You know, this is when Pennsylvania was like the wilderness. You know, it was the frontier. Like that part of Pennsylvania was still like wild with trees and native people. Allegheny became known as a reputation of where rich people sent their kids. And that tradition continued. So you got the quote, rich kids on the hill, and the townies, the townsfolk, we call them townies, at the bottom of the hill. where the city or the town is situated, it's right in most of the people who went there were from Pittsburgh. It's the Meadville is about 90 miles north of Pittsburgh. So it's north of Pittsburgh, 2.5 hours from Cleveland, and then another, I don't know, 2.5, 3 hours from like Buffalo. So like it was in this weird triangle vortex of feeders of where upper middle class, wealthy people, wait, upper middle class, lower wealthy class people sent their children. When I went there, we had 1,800 students on campus. 1,800. And at the height, I think we had 88 black people. Now, me, coming from, you know it, Akron, Ohio, why in the world would me, a person coming from a upper poverty, lower working class neighborhood, why would I, the person with a Japanese mother who cleaned, was a housekeeper in a hotel, whose father, who's an African-American father, left the family very young, you know, basically a single Japanese mom in this black neighborhood, why in the world would I ever choose or be able to afford to go to a school like Allegheny, where a lot of my classmates, my white classmates, a good chunk of them, their parents were police chiefs and doctors. Not that I'm saying a police chief is rolling in the dough, but, you know, I guess it depends on where you're located. But doctors and lawyers and politicians. And I had a classmate who basically had to leave school after the semester was over because his father had won a seat in Congress. People like that. How could I possibly afford to go to a school like that? And these are people who are like, white people who are like, generations of them had gone to the school and generations of them had become very well off. Because I guess, you know, if you're well off, you keep on being well off unless something catastrophic happens. It just, like passing down a blonde hair, blue-eyed gene, you pass on your money too. Why in the world would I go to a place like this? Let me tell you. I was a very book smart kid. I was. It would have been drilled into my head early on that education was going to be my ticket out of being poor. So I worked really hard, and I was fortunate to be in the Upward Bound program at the University of Akron. I was exposed to the idea of going away to college very early on instead of, quote, just going to the University of Akron. Not knocking the University of Akron, but I do believe that going away to college really helped me become who I am. But more on that later. More on that later. I don't know how many schools I applied to. You know, that's the advantage of being, like, really smart, testing very well, and being poor. You tend to get a break when it comes to applying for schools, at least back then. And Edward Bound was very instrumental in that. I applied to, like, I don't know, 10 different schools. I got accepted to all 10 of them, and I was given scholarships to all of them, some full, some partial. There was a bunch of state schools thrown in there, but something in me was like, I really would love to not be in the state of Ohio. I would really like to not be here. I want something different. I had a bit of wanderlust in me. I applied to Spelman, got into Spelman, the all-female, historically black college of high esteem in Atlanta, Georgia. I had gotten into Spelman. I thought it was beautiful. I was nervous about going to Spelman, though. Number one, I had never been in a situation where it was all female all the time, even though my tour guide told me, don't worry, you have opportunities to take classes within the Clark Atlanta University system. So you could take classes at Clark, or you could take classes at Morehouse or Morris Brown. You could even take classes at Georgia Tech. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But then I was nervous about the money. Spelman wasn't trying to give me no money. I was like, I don't know. I'm not used to being around all girls all the time. My best friend at the time was a boy, so I was like, I don't know. Plus, this money situation is a little questionable here. And then the school that gave me like a full ride, like room, board, books, education. And I really was interested in going there because they had a 2-3 program. You spent 2 years there, and then 3 years at Georgia Tech was Morris Brown College. Morris Brown College. The now defunct Morris Brown College. Also an HBCU, historically black college university, for those of you who don't know. I really was really interested in going to Morris Brown. The money did not hurt. And I would be in an area where there would be co-eds. The thing that scared me about Morris Brown was all freshmen had to go to chapel every Sunday on time. It was a requirement because Morris Brown was founded by the African Methodist Episcopal Church, I believe. Every freshman had to go to chapel every single Sunday. And at that time, by the end of my senior year of high school, I was definitely having a battle is very it's not a very good word. Wrestling match. I was wrestling with God. I've been raised in this conservative Southern Baptist black church. Did that all my life. By the time I was in high school, like so many things had happened in my life, and my mom was working a lot of Sundays, so there was no enforcer. So I went when I went, and I was wrestling with God. I was wrestling with God, not the existence of God. I never doubted the existence of God. And if you're an atheist or non-believer out there, I'm not trying to shove that down your throat. You believe what you believe in. I'm going to believe in what I believe in. I believe there is God. I believe it. Even if you don't believe it, I believe there is one. My wrestling match was just like in the Old Testament. Which one is it? Is it Jacob, Isaac? It gets kind of murky for me. The one that thought they had a dream in the middle of the night wrestling with God. It was like an angel, like God is an angel or something like that. And Jacob or Isaac was winning, so the angel's like, oh, not on this day, and touched him on the knee, and then he was crippled for life, and then like had to walk with a cane. That was me. So God being all omnipotent, 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 all powerful. I'm really not going to win a match with God, but I am going to wrestle with that because I was wrestling with so many demons in my life. When am I not wrestling with God? Well, I guess the difference now is I have belief and faith that it will be taken care of if I just relinquish control. But that on another that's for another moment. That's another episode, Chippies. Anywho, Spelman was a no, Morris Brown was a no. Allegheny, I applied to it because I had a cousin that went to Allegheny, and at the time, my boyfriend, who was a year ahead of me, was going to Allegheny, and I guess he was being a jerk and telling me that, oh, Allegheny is so competitive. You gotta be really smart to go into Allegheny. They don't just take anybody. And I was like, this sucker, I'm gonna show him I can get into Allegheny. I wasn't even trying to go to Allegheny because it sounded boring. It sounded boring. It was a small town. I wanted to do stuff, and Atlanta sounded very exciting. Like, why would I want to go to Allegheny? But I was like, okay, I filled out the applications, I got accepted. They wanted me to visit as a prospective student. I was like, oh, well, this is a good way to get a free trip to see my boyfriend. So, all I had to do was take the bus, the Greyhound up there, and I think they were going to like reimburse me for my trip. I can't remember. Something like that. I think they were hooking it up. They really wanted black people up there. as a prospective student, Allegheny, they would match you up with a current student and you'd stay in their dorm with them. They would give you a tour. You would get to check out the different classes, activities. And then, you know, at night, it's like, hey, you know, you could party and stuff. I don't think that's something you could get from a large college or university, but Allegheny's so tiny. They got that small town mentality. It's like, come on in, perfect stranger. Come stay with the student that you don't even know, and they don't even know you, and they might have valuables and stuff. But you come in here and bring your sleeping bag, and you could stay here, and they'll show you around, show you a good time. Also, too, I was going to play softball. That was the idea. I was going to play softball for Allegheny because I was a catcher at the time. I was actually in shape at the time. I was going to be a catcher. So it just so happened there's this white chick on the softball team who happened to have a black roommate. So they were like, oh, you could stay with her. I think her name was Jen. You could stay with Jen. You know how many Jens I've gone through at Allegheny? Anyway, no Beckys. Surprisingly, no Becky. Becky, not a big name. Maybe that's like more of a Jewish thing, and black people are just so oblivious that all white people are saying we're just calling them Becky, like Rebecca. No, Jen. We should really be calling white girls Jen, because there's 1,000 Jens. Anyway, I was supposed to stay with Jen. I'm pretty sure that's her name. And her roommate, Danielle, this black chick from Maryland. From Maryland. The first time I'd ever heard Maryland pronounced that way, because from Ohio, I thought it was pronounced Maryland, because that's how it's spelled. Maryland. Named after Queen Mary. But Danielle informed me that it is pronounced Maryland. So it was from Baltimore, Maryland. So I was going to stay with them. And then for some reason, Jen had an emergency. She had to go home to, like, Buffalo or wherever she was from. So I actually got to sleep with my sleeping bag on top of her bed, which was an advantage of not sleeping on the floor because I had more energy to go party. What? Anywho, when I got to Meadville, I was picked up at the bus station by one of the admissions counselors. They really rolled out the welcome mat for me. I never had this experience with any of the other colleges that had tried to recruit me or was trying to hit me up. I mean, I had gotten some phone calls. I think it was like Savannah School of Art and Design, because at the time I was interested in animation or something like that. Yeah, they called me and we spent some time on the phone. But no, they really opened up the doors of hospitality for me, and I fell in love with the campus and the students, and I had a good time, and I was like, wow, this is actually nice. This is nice. Met the black folks. They were cool. I was like, wow. And it didn't hurt that I found out that the ratio of black men to black females on campus at that time was like 3-1. Because all the black dudes were recruited for sports, the majority for the football team. And I was like, what? You know me. Even then, my thing for big black dudes, it hadn't totally come out of the closet at that time. But I was like, ow, really? Oh, really? And then, so I go home, and then a couple weeks later, Allegheny was like, hey, we'll give you this much money. You'll have to take out some loans, but we'll give you this much money. I was like, I'm sold. Boom. Ah, man. Gotta be careful what you wish for, though. Went through a lot at Allegheny. Went through a lot. Going there was the best and worst years of my life. I think the best because, A, like a song goes by Kanye West, everything I am, everything I'm not made me everything I am. I had to, you know, I had I had been around white people in Akron, but I never lived with white people, and especially this different class, this different socioeconomic class of white people, the different types of black people that came all over from all over, like New York and Cleveland, Africa. Yeah, people from Buffalo too. It made me confront a lot of things about myself, my thoughts on being who I am, what it is to be a female, what it is to be a black female, how black am I? Am I black enough? Am I not black because I choose to participate in, quote, white activities at this predominantly white campus that we're all stuck on? Things like that. So fast forward, it's like, wow, do you really want to go to this reunion? Every single year that I was at Allegheny, I would find myself crying. It could be a series of different incidences. Maybe I was homesick deep down. Maybe something didn't work out with some boy. Maybe I felt incredibly lonely because definitely a fish out of water situation. Who do you turn to? Who do you lean on? You know, and then not only because there's so few black people on campus, like students, in the sea of white, we didn't have that many black professors. I think that when my first year, we might have had one black professor, one black admissions counselor. That was it. And then maybe there were some black faces serving food in the cafeteria, but they were townies and they're older and you're not gonna hang out with them. I always felt, the black females always felt that the guys had it easy because the ratio was 3-1, so obviously you would think that we had it good. We had it good because we would have the pickings of the dudes. But just like anything, just because you have this multitude of dudes to choose from doesn't mean that that's the right dudes to choose from. You might have absolutely nothing in common. You have no match. You know, you might be, same parts of the magnet. You're driving each other apart. And then the black dudes, they just seemed, maybe it's because they were in sports and they were naturally popular because they played sports. It seemed that they were at least initially accepted by a good chunk of the white students, especially the white females. On the other end, for the black females, it didn't seem that we had that same type of opportunity. You had to work a little bit for it. And if you're not used to that situation, it's like, Every single year, I would get to the point of isolation that I was like, enough of this. I'm going to transfer. And I would call my mom with nervous, just trying to tell her, like, Mom, I think I want to transfer. And my mom, God bless her. You know, most parents would be like, stick it out. You chose this college. They offered you the most money. You're not going to be a quitter. My mom would say, oh, yeah, I know it's hard. It's hard. So many white people. I did not think this was good for you. But, you know, if you can find money, that's fine. But you don't need to be around so many white people. Thanks, Mom. No, so I think the first year I was going to transfer to Central State in Ohio. Another HBCU, because I was like, I went from the gamut. I was like, oh, I'm tired of being around all these white people. I need to be around some blackness, some chocolate. But it wasn't about like, oh, I don't want to be around these white people. It was more, I think I did not have enough self-awareness to realize it's not that I am surrounded by all these white people. It's that I don't feel like I have a cultural connection here at this school. Because we're in a small town, it's not like we have all these clubs to go to, like in a large metropolitan city. There were just bars. Well, you had to be 21 and over to go to the bar. The bars is where they would have a dance floor and music. I, at the time, this is the downside of being, quote, book smart. I got into school early. I was actually about a year or at least a year to 2 years younger than most of my classmates all through school. So by the time it was like college, I couldn't drink. And at that point, as a freshman, I didn't even want to drink. I didn't see the purpose of getting drunk every single weekend. So there were no clubs that I could go to. I didn't drink, so I couldn't do that. At that time, especially because we were in the mountains, this was before satellite radio, God forbid, before that kind of technology. The only station that would consistently provide hip-hop, well, not even consistently, we didn't, you had to live in a certain dorm to have your radio antenna fixtured a certain way that you could get maybe on a good day some of the radio stations from Pittsburgh or Cleveland, because the mountains, those darn mountains with all those trees, got in the way. And then in terms of cable, you could try, but the local cable provider for Crawford County refused to carry BET. Refused. And this is before MTV got all chocolated up, except Yo MTV Raps. You know, MTV was not loving the blackness like they are now. Well, I don't even think they do. Do they even care? Right now, it's all reality shows. They refused to carry BET because they just didn't feel that there was a need for it. Because there was, like, how many black townies in town? You know? So there was this whole gap, this whole piece that was missing. No music, no TV, no images of yourself being portrayed unless, what, in a book somewhere that you got? I was like, oh, I need to get away from this. Let me go to Central State. And then for whatever reason, I would go through the process. I would send away for the materials, want to be a transfer student, all that, go through all the hoops. And then at the last minute, I'd be like, maybe I shouldn't throw in the towel. Something would pull me back in. Something would pull me back in. Then sophomore year would come around. That's when I was going to transfer to, I was either going to transfer to Howard or, yeah, I was going to do Howard at that time. Yeah, I was going to do Howard. My third year, I was like, maybe I should, I was still about to transfer. I was like, Howard can still be on the plate. Every single year. Every single year I'd fill out the application. Every single year I would send it out. Every single year my mom would say, I know it's hard. Every single year something would stop me from leaving. I don't know. Maybe it's true. Maybe I did want to finish what I started. Or I think it was more like we had this like really militant student on campus. I guess every black college experience, everyone has at least one friend, you know. You know, we all go through a Malcolm X phase. We stop eating pork for a while. Everything gets like uber militaristic. I had a friend, his name was Ox. Yeah, that's what he went with. And he was his biggest one. He was from this small town outside of Pittsburgh called Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. This dude named Ox. He was very big. He was a big black dude. Not my kind of big black dude. He was more like rotund black dude. Like big, like a big old mountain. But I think it was like a lineman or something. So it worked for him. You would talk to him and he was like extremely, extremely sharp, intelligent. Like I think he might have been like a law, pre-law, philosophy type of major, you know. And then he had got that blackness thing. Yeah, it was a lot going on there. He would talk all this smack. He was actually a roommate of my boyfriend at the time, the one who was like a little bit older than me, who went to college. I was like, Ox, why are you here? If you claim to hate white people so much, you play on a football team with them, you know, you eat lunch with them. They talk to you. You talk back with them. Like, if you hate white people so much, why are you here? Why are you doing this? And he said, well, I need to learn my enemy. I said, what? He said, yeah, I do not intend to be poor forever. And I want to be in a situation where I am working with white people. You could be a successful black person, but that's amongst black people, but that's only going to take you so far. I want to be in that main world. I am militant, but I am not going to be, I'm not going to segregate myself because I want to be successful career-wise and financially. And in order to do that, you have to be in the mainstream. And I was like, huh, that's an interesting perspective. So I think every time I would get an acceptance letter from a college, another college that I was thinking about transferring to, I think I would hear Ox's voice in my head. And it's like, are you gonna run off and leave now? Or are you going to tough it out and quote, learn your enemy? I don't think white people are my enemy. I just didn't know them. I think that was the problem. I did not know white people. I mean, I knew white people like, oh, I know that guy. We're in science class together at Central Howard High School. We're in science. But I did not know them. I did not have a deep relationship with them. I did not have them in my face every single freaking day. I did not know what they ate. I mean, you think, you know what's crazy? You think about cafeteria food. It's like, what, burgers and fries and salad. There was stuff on the salad bar that I didn't understand why it's on the salad bar. Because to me, growing up where I did, I thought a salad consisted of lettuce, maybe some carrots, tomatoes, cucumbers, onions. Maybe you put some cheese on it and you put some dressing. That's a salad. And then I would see stuff like, you know, like white girls putting like cranberries and cottage cheese and peaches on top of a bed of spinach, and that's a salad. And I was like, what? What's all that fruit doing on that salad? Okay, this is before, we gotta remember, this is before Wendy's and McDonald's and all these other places decided to jazz up the menu. I had never seen anything like that. Beets? What you doing putting beets on that salad for? Oh, it was just so weird to me. Like, I remember seeing beets, like, I ate beets before, obviously. I hated beets the way my mom would serve them because she would have the beets and then we'd have rice and we'd have cabbage and then the coloring of the beets would color the white rice almost like a bluish purpley color. And especially as a child, I was really against having funny colored food. Like, I really did not like funny colored food. I felt that rice, having purple rice was very unnatural. Bluish purple rice, unnatural to me. And I refused to eat it. So when I saw beets at the salad bar, I was like, what? That can't be beets. That, why would they have that on the salad bar? I'm going to try that because maybe that's a different type of vegetable that I don't know about because it's so brightly purpley colored. Maybe that's cranberry sauce. Oh, the depth of ignorance. This is how deep my ignorance was. And I mean ignorance as in like not consciously, not wanting to be ignorant. It's just that I just had not been exposed to anything like that before. Oh, man. So, yeah, of course, I would want to go and relive that. I would want to spend money to relive that moment at college. Oh, man. Yeah. Beets. Sugar beets, sugar beet seeds. Yeah, there was a song in Sesame Street that was sugar beets, sugar beets. I'm not going to lie. All this talk about food is getting me hungry. So I think this is the perfect time to end this episode. I think I'm going to have me a salad. And I might run out right now. Get me some cottage cheese with the salad. I'm feeling adventurous. I hadn't had that combination in ages. In ages and ages and ages. even when I go to Golden Corral, I have not had that combination. But I think I might go get me some spinach and some cottage cheese and some peaches and make it happen. Make it happen. Maybe not cranberries. Cranberries are not in season right now, but I think I'm going to make that happen. Anyway, I'll let you know how that goes. Hit me up on the social media, Tippies. Until next time, remember, there's no me without you. See ya!